Audience in the country, I am Bob Enyart, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, heterosexual, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. We're going to quickly get to the phones tonight. Last night, I know that I did mostly a monologue through the show, but we were talking about the Denver columnist who died, Gene Amol, and his last column that he wrote to be published after his death appeared on the front page of yesterday's Rocky Mountain News, where Gene Amol said, "In death, I don't know where I am going or if I shall even exist." And we pointed out, of course, in last night's show that, well, tonight, today, now, Gene Amol knows that, yes, you do exist after death. Death is just the next step in your life, and he does exist. He knows a lot right now that he could have known before he died. And now it's too late. It's too late. By the way, anybody out there listening, I've got a question for you. Gene Amol, when you read his columns, especially the last months of his columns, when as he's writing every day knowing he's going to die and writing about the process of dying, you definitely get the idea that the most important thing to him is his family, in treating his family with kindness, enjoying them and respecting them, loving them. That seems to me the most important thing to Gene Amol. And a question I have for you is that something that separates good people from bad people? If someone likes their friends and they treat their dog nicely, or they love their family, if you know that about somebody, does that mean, yep, that's a good guy, versus people who are not kind to their friends and loving and considerate and intimate with their family members, that's a bad guy? Is that a way to test between good people and bad people? Do bad people usually hate their family members? So if you have an idea, if you think you can answer that question, because that's, I think, the best thing anybody could say about Gene Amol, is that he liked his family. And so I'm wondering, does that make someone a good person? If we looked at evil men in history, and do they all hate their family members, or do quite a few of them like their own family? Is it a distinguishing feature of good people that they like their families and bad people don't? So I'd like to know, because we're trying to find out if Gene Amol was a good person. Is he in heaven right now, or is he in hell? And the best thing, he was an atheist. He was an atheist. He didn't know, really couldn't care less about God or the afterlife. And so that doesn't sound like it bodes well for him. But somebody can say, as somebody said to me today, hearing the show last night, somebody said to me, well, but he was such a nice man. How could you say anything bad about Gene Amol? He really liked his family. So I want to know, is that a distinguishing characteristic of good people versus bad people? And maybe you could give me an example. Maybe not. 1-800-8-ENYART. 1-800-836-9278. Now, George W. Bush has been speaking a lot about God lately. I'm going to give you real quick of three things Bush has said about God, and then I'm going to go to the phones. We're going to start in Delphi, Indiana, with Wally. But first, here's three things Bush said. Here's from the New York Times, just all in the last few weeks. Bush said, government can write checks, but it cannot put hope in people's hearts or a sense of purpose in people's lives. Now, he was speaking to religious leaders at the White House recently. He said, that is done by people who have heard a call and who act on faith and are willing to share in that faith. And I'm not talking about a particular religion. I'm talking about all religions. That's George W. Bush. George W. Bush on God. Only people of faith can put hope in the hearts of men. And I'm not talking about a particular religion, let's say Christianity. I'm talking about all religions. Like the Taliban, they were very religious. I'm sure they can put hope in the hearts of men. And the Buddhists and the Hindus and the Mormons. How about the Mormons? How about the Moonies? All religions. There's some pretty whacked out religions out there. But how about George W. Bush saying, I'm not talking about a particular religion. I'm talking about all religions. And then a week earlier, he was praising a homeless man from New York named Emery Bent because he was a successful graduate of a community program. And this is what George Bush said, that praising this homeless guy who graduated from some community program. He said, this man was more than willing to give praise to an Almighty. Now, how's that for an indefinite article? Ann, what does that mean? What is an indefinite article? Well, there are public school teachers listening right now, so we're not going to explain it. We're not going to explain what it is, but we'll tell them, we'll give them example. The word a, like a God, or an Almighty, those are indefinite articles, as compared to definite articles like the. Like the God or the Almighty. And it means something very different when you say that a man is willing to give praise to an Almighty. What does it mean? What does that indefinite article mean? Why would Bush say, I'm not talking about a particular religion. I'm talking about all religions can put hope in people's hearts. And we should give praise to an Almighty. See, whatever Almighty goes with whichever religion that puts hope in your heart, give praise to that Almighty. And then just a couple weeks ago, Bush repeated something he's been saying for about a year now or more. We ought to welcome faith into our welfare system. You see, conservative Christians are against welfare because God said, thou shalt not steal. But George W. Bush has always been pro-welfare, so he figures that, well, the biggest obstacle to welfare in America are conservative Christians, so let's give millions of dollars to church leaders, and maybe we could get them on the side of welfare. So we're going to go to a commercial break when we come back immediately to Delphi, Indiana. All right, live commercial break inside the show. This is Bob. I know it's a live break. It is. It's not taped. It's not recorded. In fact, what were we just talking about? Well, global warming. No, we were talking about George W. Bush and his statements on God. Okay. Hey, after the show today, I try to make it a practice of staying in the studio for 10 minutes, and we route our order line into the studio, our 1-888-8-NYART, so that if anyone would like to order any of our videos where we debate unbelievers, evolutionists, atheists, you name it, philosophy classes at colleges. If you'd like to order any of our videos, our literature, like the plot manuscript, the overview of the Bible, or our audio tape albums, mostly they are teaching on the Bible. You can call in 1-888-8-N-YARDS, and I'd be happy to talk with you about, based on what it is you're interested in learning, which of our materials. We have about 50 different SKUs, as they call it in the industry. But, you know, does a video meet your need of what it is you want to learn about, or one of our audio tapes? We've got fun stuff. We have an audio album called Nicer Than God. Nicer Than God. Now, there are a lot of Christians out there who like a more firm approach to evangelism. They like a bit more firm approach. And sometimes we Christians get a little frustrated with the more timid approach, where you can't judge, you can't rebuke, no one is condemned, everyone is forgiven. So call us and get nicer than God. one 800 8 NYARDS, 1-800-836-9278. Now in Delphi, Indiana, Wally, speak your mind. Hello,
nice,
Wally.
Nice is nauseating.
Nice is nauseating.
Doesn't it make you want to just vomit?
Yeah, I hear you.
What happens when they catch Jeffrey Dahmer, or a homo sex molester?
Oh, no, you can't say that this month.
He was so nice.
Well, good point, Wally, but this is an H-free zone. I'm Bob and you're live. You can't use the H word for the whole month of May.
Well, I'll try the best I can to not do that.
Okay, thank you.
What I'm calling is, for these the news media and their fervor over attacking these pedophile
priests. Yeah, there we go. Pedophile priest.
Pedophile, child molesting priest.
Right.
And the hypocrisy that they're showing. Now, I'm sure you heard the story today where a 26-year-old male walked up to a priest somewhere on the East Coast and shot him.
I did not hear it.
Well, I heard this on WLS out of Chicago.
Oh, my.
Yeah, 26-year-old, and I think the priest was like 80 years old. And,
my.
There were witnesses.
So knowing nothing else other than that headline, the suspicion is that the guy would accuse the priest of molesting him 15 years ago.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
Wow, what a sad, tragic thing that's come upon the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, and what happens when you're nice to homosexual. Oh, sorry.
No, that's right. Oh, not again.
Look. Pedophile child molesters.
Yeah.
And you welcome them into your church.
Hey, Wally, I have right here a copy of the New York Daily News. Can you hear it? The whole paper somebody sent to me, one of our listeners.
Good.
And, you know, I could have gotten this in an email. It's just a quote out of one article. But we're in Denver, so it's interesting to get the New York Daily News now and then.
Right.
But it quotes this Cardinal Daly out of, I'm sorry, Cardinal Law out of Boston, who's saying Bernard Law, the Roman Catholic, and he's defending himself. He just moved pedophile priest from one church to another, and he says, I'm not a policeman, I'm a shepherd. Well, a shepherd is supposed to protect his sheep from the wolves. You're one pretty despicable shepherd there, Cardinal Law. And just 2 weeks ago, he was blaming a 6-year-old kid. In his court filing, Cardinal Law said that the kid was negligent and it was partly his fault he was molested.
That's Cardinal above the law.
Whoa.
Hey.
Cardinal above the law.
Check this out. And your listeners need to know this. And I'm going to kind of spill the beans and kind of reveal a sin that happened to me in my youth.
Yeah.
When I was about 5 or 6 years old, 3 adolescent teens convinced me that I should hang out with them. They led me into an empty field, and 2 guys acted like for the lookout. The other guy pulled my pants down, and he was going to perform oral sex on me.
Oh, no.
And I started to scream and yell and fight,
well,
and they ran away.
You. Good for you, Wally.
And your listeners, and America needs to know what sick, disgusting, pervert criminals, I'm going to say it.
That's it. Your time's up. Goodbye, goodbye, Wally. I just hung up on Wally. Because we get the point, and we are so disgusted already a priori that May is an H-free zone. We are utterly disgusted. And we will not take calls this month from, and we really don't want to take calls about. It's an H-free zone. And by the way, you can't use the L word either, nor the G word, nor the B word, nor the Q word. Can't use any of those words, nor the T word, nor any of the T words. All right, let's go to Oklahoma, 1-800-8-N-YARDS, 1-800-836-9278. Gary, speak your mind.
Hello, Bob.
Howdy.
I always get so nervous when I call.
Well, Gary, don't worry about it. Just speak up, though, nice and loud.
All right. I just had a question about the Bible.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in my living room. I'm reading 1 Timothy.
Yeah.
And when Paul says, I am chief, he's talking about the chief sinner.
Yeah.
About him being the chief sinner.
He says he is the worst sinner who ever lived.
Yeah.
Yeah, he sure
is. Well, I've always wondered, where does that put him and the devil?
All right. Well, the devil's not a human being, and so Paul wasn't comparing himself to angels. He's comparing himself to human beings. Of course, angels could sin, and many angels have sinned. But he's talking in the context of human beings. He's not saying he was more evil than Lucifer.
Well, I just always wondered that.
But you don't even need to worry about that. What in the world is he talking about being the chief sinner, the number one sinner? Why would he say that? What did Paul do that was so terrible?
Are you asking me or are you?
Well, yeah. Because really, when you compare Paul to the devil, that's really beside the point. Because when Paul talks about the terribly wicked things he did in his life, he's not comparing himself to Lucifer. But he's comparing himself to the other enemies of God among the human race. And of all those, he says he's the worst. But you know what's interesting? Many Christians, they read that, even Sunday school teachers, and they'll immediately contradict Paul. And they'll say, now, of course, Paul was not the worst sinner, as though he's just being some kind of reverse false humility. But Paul says that this is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptance.
Right.
And then he says in the same sentence that I am the chief of sinners. And Christians reject that. And they say, oh, no, Judas was worse, or Adam was worse, or Caiaphas was worse, or Herod, or Pilate, or whoever. But those guys were not worse.
Well, I kind of find comfort in it.
Yeah?
Sort of.
How so?
Well, I mean, if he's the chief sinner.
And God gave him so much grace.
Right.
And loved him so much, and he was such a blessing to those around him and to the Lord. Well, then, imagine that God could do the same thing with us.
Right.
Yeah, very good point. Hey, I just want to leave it out there. I don't want to answer the question, Gary. For the rest of the folks in the audience, you know, on this show, we shamelessly plug our monthly Bible studies. And I suggest this, that 99.9% of Christians don't understand at all what Paul's talking about when he says he's the worst sinner who ever lived, that he's the chief sinner. I think Christians don't understand that.
I don't think they do either.
Right. And if they get the plot, the manuscript, the overview of the whole Bible, and read through that, they can get it from us calling 1-888-8-N-YART.
Well, I have the plot.
Have you read it yet?
I've read it.
What's
I
that?
Love it.
I didn't hear you. What?
I said I've read it.
All right.
And I love it. I've talked to you about it before, but.
All right. All right. Well, anyway, hey, I want to thank you very much, Gary, for calling in.
Okay.
Because enabling
us. I just had that one question.
Yeah. Yeah, to talk about that very interesting topic. And actually, in the plot, we do talk specifically about that verse. And it's part, when you understand the overview of the Bible, you can understand why Paul said that. And if not, you get your money back. Money back guarantee. All right, let's go to New York. Dan, speak your mind.
Hey, Bob, a couple things.
Things are great.
First, you were talking about that one reporter, and if a person is good to his family, is he a
right.
good person?
Right.
Well, one verse from Scripture came to mind where Christ was talking about the fathers, and if ye then being evil, will give good gifts to your children, how much more should a Heavenly Father give good things that I may ask of him?
Dan,
I don't think being just good to your family makes you a good person.
Dan, you are brilliant. You are so brilliant. Because so many Christians, if you criticize someone, they say, but he's such a nice guy. Mm-hmm. And nowhere in the Bible does God say, if you're nice, then you go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there's a child molester who lives on your street, one thing you could be assured of, he will be the nicest guy on the block. He'll be the nicest.
Yeah.
Who, in a public high school, who is nicer than the teacher who's trying to seduce the students? Is there any teacher nicer in a public high school than the one who's trying to have an affair with the students? He's the nicest in the entire school.
And it sort of leads into the next comment. You talk about Bushwood faiths. I was brought up Roman Catholic before I was saved.
Yeah.
And the only thing I had was a fear of going to hell. There was no hope.
Oh.
And that sort of all ties in, if you think about it. When you really know what man is, before he's saved, he's spiritually dead, a slave to sin, wicked and evil. And unfortunately, not all faiths give us hope except for Christianity.
That is the only hope, Christ
Amen.
In us, our hope of glory. Dan, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Bob. Have a good night.
Thanks, I appreciate that. What a great call where Jesus Christ said, even evil men give good gifts to their children. Didn't he also say that you have to, if you want to love him, you have to hate your children and your parents? Now, a lot of people say, well, Jesus was a good teacher. Good teacher? He must have been a lunatic. If all you think he was a good teacher, he said you got to love me and hate your own children, your own parents. What kind of an egomaniacal fiend would say that? Unless he was God. And in the Bible, by the way, I know there are biblically challenged people out there that when the Bible says that Jacob loved Rachel, but Leah, he hated, it doesn't mean he hated Leah. It's a figure of speech. It's a Hebrew figure of speech. When you use love and hate in that way, it means to love and to love more. When Jesus said you have to hate your parents, if you want to love me, you have to hate your mother and father. The Bible tells us to honor your mother and honor your father. And you love them and you love and care for your children. You don't hate your family members. It means to love and to love more. You love God more so that in this manner of speaking, in this figure of speech, it's as though you hate your own family, how much you love God. But it doesn't mean that you hate your family. So when it says, so-and-so I loved and so-and-so I hated, you have to understand there's a figure of speech that's it's on the tip of the tongue for people who understand the Bible. But for someone who's biblically challenged, if the Bible says you got to love so-and-so or God loves so-and-so and hates so-and-so, they think, oh, he hates them. Now, if you know, the Bible's a very thick book. Why is it that thick? It's in the proportion to the thickness of your skull. I have a very thick skull, being a human being, and you have a very thick skull, being a human being. That's why God gave us such a thick book. He could have done it all in a pamphlet, but we're thick. So he says some things 12 times, same thing, and people still don't get it. How many times does God have to use love and hate as a figure of speech before somebody will say, oh, yeah, that's a figure of speech. Goodbye, Denver. Live spot here. Howdy, this is Bob. And right now at the bottom of the hour, we're talking just to people on the internet. That's it. Well, also to people in the studio audience. But it's the internet and the studio audience, just those two. And so this is a more intimate setting. And I'd like to tell you guys, well, first off, to thank you. Because it's mostly people who tune into the show over the web that are our supporters. And if it weren't for you guys, we would not be able to further this ministry. So thank you very much. And to you guys, I'd like to suggest, and I don't talk about it a lot on our radio spots, but the Best of Bob, the monthly Best of Bob, which is the 8 best shows of the month. Now, last night we talked for an hour about evidence that there is an afterlife and there is a God. Just evidence, just not looking at the biblical evidence or the scientific evidence or the historical or archaeological evidence, none of that, or the philosophical evidence, just looking at human beings and the nature of human beings and what we can know from looking at ourselves. And just from looking at ourselves, we can see overwhelming evidence that we are spirit beings and that there is an afterlife and that we will live beyond death. We can know all that just from that. It's pretty cool. Now, it's unusual that I would take an entire hour, a whole show, and do that. But we do things like that occasionally. And at the end of the month, we rate every show at the end of the night. We rate each show on a scale of 0 to 10. And at the end of the month, 21 shows, we pick the best 8 shows. Actually, we do it twice a month. We pick the best 4 and then the best 4 again. And we mail them out to people getting Best of Bob. Now, Best of Bob, that's the most expensive service we offer. It's $49.95 a month. And we mail out 2 tapes, 4 hours of shows around the middle of the month and at the end of the month. And you listen on the web. If it's hard for you to get it on the web, or if there are people you'd like to hear the show, you can order it and share the tapes with others, 1-888-8-N-Young. One 800 8 N Yards, 1-800-836-9278. All right, so Dan from New York, must be from the Rochester area, I'm guessing, with our affiliate there. Dan from New York gave us an excellent verse showing that Jesus believed that evil people can give good gifts to their children. And if you think about Gene Amel, and so many people think, wow, he was a good guy. He was really a good guy. And look at how fond he was for his family. And maybe that's the most enduring and distinguishing feature of his life. If people say, what is noteworthy about Gene Amel? Well, he liked his family. But if a man loves his family, is that what distinguishes a good man from a bad man? I want to think about that for a moment. Think about some bad man. Think about some bad man. Who's the worst man you could think of in the last 1,000 years? Anybody in the studio audience, yell out a bad man. Maybe I could hear it through our double non-parallel studio glass. Hitler. Okay, We've got a grandmother in the audience who shouted out Hitler. Okay, now we've got public school students in the audience also. You guys know who Hitler is? Yeah, you two in the back row, you public school students. You've heard of him. Good, I'm glad you've heard of him. Okay, Hitler, one of the worst people in the history of the world. He's certainly among the most evil of men. Now, what were his feelings toward his family? How did Hitler treat his family. You know, even his, how did he act toward little children and even his dog? How did he act toward them? Was he nice or was he rotten? Well, he loved kids. He loved little kids. They were always welcome in his home, on his estate. There's overwhelming photographic evidence that abundantly attest to Hitler loved kids, and he took time to be kind with them, to play with them. In his will, he referred to his newlywed wife. What was her name? Hitler had the brown shirts and the brown house. He was superstitious. So Braun, what was her first name? I'm asking the audience. Eva, the same grandmother, knows the woman's name. Eva Braun. And in his will, he spoke of the many years of true friendship he had with her. And in his will, Hitler left personal and sentimental items to his sister and his mother-in-law. And in his will, he remembered with affection his former secretary, Mrs. Winter. I remember her name because Hitler outlawed the Christmas celebration in the government schools and replaced it with a winter festival, a winter holiday. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Sounds sort of like something we've done in America. He had a favorite dog. What kind of dog do you think Hitler would have? What would be his favorite breed of dogs? Anybody know? Huh? Okay, German Shepherd. That was his favorite dogs. I wonder why. And those little Aryan dogs. And, in fact, his favorite was called Blondie. Of course, right? Blonde hair, blue eyes. Hitler was a real sicko. But anyway, he was nice to the dogs. He was kind to his friends. He was intimate and even loving toward family. That's not what distinguishes good men from evil men. It's somewhat normal for rotten people to be nice to their friends. You know, that's not especially unusual. I don't mean to overly emphasize a comparison of Hitler's love of his family with Gene Ammill's love for his family. Of course, they're, you know, hardly worthy of being named in the same sentence, those two men. But if we can find this much similarity between Gene Ammill and a fiend like Adolf Hitler in the way they're nice to their friends and family, I don't think it'll be all that difficult to find an entire army of evil men who loved their own families. Would that be hard, to find an army of evil men who were nice to their own families? So it seems clear that being nice to friends, loving family, and being kind to pets does not distinguish a good man from an evil man. Just doesn't. 1-800-8-NYART, 1-800-836-9278. Let's go to Maybank, Texas. Tom, speak your mind.
Bob.
Yes, sir.
Your show gets better and better every night.
Oh, you're kind.
You know, I heard something yesterday on Paul Harvey.
Yeah.
And I was going to call you last night, and I forgot. But let me tell you what he said.
All right.
He was lamenting the fact that more doctors did not talk to their patients, women patients, about the morning pill, the morning after pill.
You're kidding me.
No. And then he said, he quoted some doctor, famous doctor, who said that if the morning after pill were prescribed, that they could eliminate half of the abortions in America.
Not realizing that the morning after pill is an abortion.
That slayed me. I said, you know.
It's an abortifacient.
Yeah.
It's designed to kill the baby after you have a fertilized egg.
Exactly.
You remember the name of the pill? What do they call that pill?
It was
the RU for killing people pill.
Yeah,
it's the RU 486. Now, what does it mean to 86 something? That means to what? So, if you're going to 86 something, what does that mean?
That means kill them.
Kill them or get rid of it.
Yeah, throw it in the trash.
Yeah, and so the name of the pill is RU486. RU486ing a baby.
Yeah, I remember it came out of France, didn't it?
Yeah, well, that's where they first legalized it. Yeah. I imagine they developed it there.
But I thought maybe I didn't understand what that pill was, but I,
you understood. That. Sometimes the people we look up to as conservative Christians let us down.
Exactly. And also, Bob, I don't know if you listened to Rush today. You're probably too busy. But Rush finally admitted that President George W. is a liberal.
What?
He said it. He said the guy called in and he said, he's saying that George W. is really a good conservative. And Rush says, no. We really can't say that. He's not a conservative.
I would. Well, I'm shocked to hear that Rush would say that. I can't. Tom, are you sure you heard it right?
Yeah, he said he's not exactly a conservative. I guess George W. has just about undone everything that the Republican Party has tried to get rid of in the last 8 years.
Well, him and his father. You know, George W. Bush has grown government enormously.
Yes.
Enormously. In the short time he's been in office. And, he's fighting now to bring welfare is destroyed hundreds of millions of people around the world. And now he wants to bring it into the church.
Yep.
That'd be like a drug dealer and a drug dealer thinking, well, you know, if we could get the pastors to sell this crack cocaine, we could really sell a lot more.
Yeah.
And they would know who to give it to, who really needs a pick-me-up.
You know, if God says that something is wrong, having the church do it doesn't make it right.
Yeah, it's worse when the church does it. George W. Bush. Now, Tom, you're from Texas. You're from Bush's home state.
I know it.
Can't you pick up the phone and call him?
I wish I could.
Do you have any kind of pull? What do you do for a living?
I'm a rancher.
Oh, you and he are almost brothers.
Huh?
You and he are almost brothers.
Well,
You got to call him up.
If I had the phone number and I could get him on the phone, sure, yeah. I'd call him up. But
yeah, and so if I were able to talk to George W. Bush, I'd ask him a few questions. And you know what, Tom? As soon as you and I hang up, I want to let the audience know the questions I'd ask George W. Bush.
Okay, Bob.
All right. Hey, thank you very much for your call.
Keep up the good work.
God bless you.
Okay, bye.
What a nice guy. Now, after this next commercial break, we're going to go to Indiana and talk to Kirk. But it may be maybe the next caller, whoever it is, if it's Kirk or whoever the call screener might be talking to, 1-800-8-NYART, I'll take the call, and then I want to talk to that person about the questions I have for George W. Bush. Maybe I'll make the caller answer in Bush's place. We'll do that. All right. Now we stop the tape. See that? I like that. I like when the commercial starts and we stop the tape to let everybody know that it's a recorded spot that we're saving you from. And we're doing a live commercial. After this program, the program ends. Man, how does an hour go so fast? I come into the studio normally with about 15 things I want to talk about. And we get to about 4, and I get frustrated every night because it just flies by. You know, the problem is too many callers. Doug McBurney on his show on KGov, you know, I listened to Doug's show this past week. It was a funny show. It's up there right now. It's a funny, funny show. But anyway, on his show, he doesn't tolerate sponsors or callers. That's pretty funny in and of itself. Of course, we have the brightest audience in the country, So, and we prefer the liberals' knuckleheads to call. But at the end of the show, which will be here in less than 15 minutes, I try to have a practice of staying in the studio for 10 minutes after the show. And you could call us at, well, you could try to get in on the call line, 1-800-8-NYART, or the order line, which they route into the studio after the show, 1-888-8-NYART. And I like to talk to two people because we've sort of calculated that if every night after the show, if two people sign up for our monthly Bible studies or to have the monthly sermons from Denver Bible Church mailed to them automatically or the eight best shows of the month mailed to them, that's really the way this show can be financially stable and continue to grow. So give us a call. All right. I announced during, what was it, the commercial at the bottom of the hour that we rate every show, 1 to 10. And somebody in the someone in the studio audience is trying to rate this show in the middle of the show. Now, you can't do that. We might bomb from here on out, or it might be great from here on out. We don't know yet. But let's go to Indiana, Muncie, Indiana. Kirk, speak your mind.
Hi, Bob. If you have any desire to be on Politically Correct, you better book your appearance soon.
He's going off the air, huh?
Yes, definitely.
Bill Maher.
The only shows that were worth anything were the ones that you were on.
Well, that's kind of you. But how about the ones that Doug McBurney was on?
Oh, and that one, too. That was a good one.
And Jason Jones from Hawaii.
Okay. I didn't see Jason.
Jason was fabulous. But anyway, what's up, Kirk?
The first group of people that come to mind that really love their families the most to me was the Mafia. I mean, they really love their families, especially if you watch, the Godfather saga.
Mafia. My family is the Mafia. We came from Sicily. You know, my great-grandfather, Dominic Galluccio, was born in Sicily. And my uncle, Adolf Galluccio, represents the Mafia on the East Coast.
Those people love their family.
You're not kidding. What a great example. So just because Gene Amell loved his family does not separate him from the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Good point.
But to follow up on that, the question I got from an atheist girl, she wants to know why would a loving and just God send Gandhi to hell? You know, Gandhi, who's a role model of nonviolent protest to bring about civil rights and peace.
Yeah.
Why would a loving God send Gandhi to hell?
All right. Well, Gandhi was willing to put millions of human beings through hell when Hitler was in charge, the Nazis ruled Germany, and they were slaughtering people by the millions. And do you know, a matter of history, Kirk, do you know Gandhi's public statement as to how they should have dealt with Hitler and the Nazis?
I don't know it specifically. I can only imagine.
Well, what would you guess, knowing Gandhi?
I would guess that he would be a pacifist and be against any kind of war.
Absolutely. Gandhi said that it would be wrong to take up a gun to stop the Nazis from killing the Jews. He told the Jews that what they should do is not resist Hitler. How's that one?
No wonder the liberals love him so much.
Right, exactly. Gandhi is also this kind of guy. What do you think of a guy who says, do what I tell you to do or I will hurt myself? How mature is that? Is that mature?
That sounds a little sick.
It sounds sick, and it sounds rather manipulative, and that's what he said. Do what I tell you to do or I'm going to starve myself to death.
Sort of like Jack Kevorkian, when they put him in prison after he killed all those people and suicide. He threatened to starve himself.
Right. So somebody who says, hey, do what I tell you to do or I'm going to hurt myself, that's a sick person. And because Gandhi rejected Jesus Christ, he didn't know how to deal with wickedness. He thought his nonviolence was so brilliant because he wasn't up against the Nazis. He was up against the British. You know, and the British were not about to be as barbaric as the Nazis were. But if the British were inclined to be like the atheistic evolutionary socialist Nazis, well, then the British would have just slaughtered Gandhi and all the Indians who were on the beach making salt. They would have just shot them each one in the head with one bullet. So,
well, George, if George W. Bush, if he were alive today and he was in the United States, George W. Bush would probably send him to Israel to negotiate the peace process over there with the Palestinians.
Yeah, all right. So Gandhi was a fool. He was evil. He deserved to go to hell. He was willing to put millions of innocent people through hell right here on earth. And that kind of apathy, that kind of sick mind that says, do what I say or I'll hurt myself. We don't need people like that in heaven.
Oh, no.
What, is he going to manipulate God? God, you do what I say or I'm going to hurt myself. I mean, it's just, Gandhi hated God.
And you've got to understand the idea that you have to destroy evil to protect the innocent people. Because
Exactly. He cared more about his pacifism than he did about an innocent child being slaughtered by the Nazis. So on Judgment Day, it'll be interesting to watch Gandhi and what he's charged with and how he's convicted. I'm looking forward to Judgment Day. It's going to be big.
Lots of interesting things. Hopefully I can prosecute a few people that I've run into.
All right.
Kirk
from Tennessee. We have a Kurt from Tennessee, and he wants to take Bush's questions.
Okay.
So I'm going to go to him. I'm going to go from Kirk to Kurt. Thank you very much, Kirk. All right. Now, in what is this, Knoxville, Tennessee? Knoxville.
Knoxville.
I couldn't read the writing. Knoxville, Tennessee. Go ahead, Kurt.
Well, I thought you wanted me to answer questions.
I do.
About my strategery.
I do. Okay.
As George W., I have strategery.
Strategery?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
You don't know what strategery is?
I haven't used the word.
It's a kind of a strategy thing. It's a word that means I have a plan.
Strategery.
I do have a plan.
I believe you. Okay.
I do. I do have a plan.
I believe you. Okay, now, are you going to be George W. Bush in this?
I am W.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask you some questions.
Okay.
All right. And to start with, just use normal words. Right,
that is a normal W word.
Oh, it is?
It's a malapropism.
Okay, I'm a bit slow. I got to tell you. I'm a bit slow. Okay, well, tell me, based on your own strategery, why is it, George W., when you say you're pro-life, why have you packed the Texas Supreme Court with pro-abortion judges?
Well, in the scheme of things, my press secretary has decided that more money will win the liberals over and will win all their views over to our way of thinking eventually.
Well, you are a good George W. Bush because you didn't answer my question. My question was, since you say that you're pro-life all the time, W, if I can call you W?
Yes, please.
Why is it that you packed the Texas Supreme Court with pro-abortion judges?
Because if we vote for anti-abortion judges, the people who make a lot of money, the industry of abortion, would be hurt, and we're for the economy.
Oh, so you put pro-abortion judges on the Texas Supreme Court for economic considerations.
I really don't want to state it that way, but that is my strategy if you get right down to it.
Okay. All right. Now, I've got a question for you about this. Do you think that homosexuality... Ah! I owe a dollar!
Please send it to the United States government, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Ah! I have to send it to the show engineer. How much have I lost this month? $5 so far. $5. I can't ask any of those questions.
Well, thank you, Bob. I appreciate that.
You're pretty good. I got to tell you that. All right. Well, since it's May, there's an entire slew of questions that I can't ask you about. But I do want to ask you about welfare.
Yes.
You're a Christian? Is that true?
Yes, and I do believe in welfare.
Didn't God in the Bible say, "Thou shalt not steal"?
Well, that's probably true. However, in the New Testament, we've always found that more money will win the liberals over to our way of thinking.
Okay. All right. And that's in the New Testament.
I believe it is.
Now, how do you respond to someone who says that because God says thou shalt not steal, the government has no right to take money from us to give it to others for health care or education or unemployment insurance? Or...
I'm glad you asked that question, because that is true on a state level, but however, we are on a federal level now. And the way we did things in Texas, we did try to go by some of that. But on the federal level, it's more important to remember that more money will win the liberals over to our way of thinking.
All right. Okay, so now, W, how about with – it seems that you're very much in support of government-run schools.
Yes, yes.
And I have a question.
No child left behind is the way I like to put it.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you think that, given human nature is what it is, do you think that if the government offers to take care of children in some way, like to educate them, do you think that maybe that would encourage parents to neglect their own responsibility to educate their own kids? The more the government offers to do for people, the less people will do for themselves.
Well, in our education plan, Karen Hughes thought that also, and we had to let her go, because in reality, if you want a No Child Left Behind policy, you have to spend more money, because it will eventually win the liberals over to our way of thinking.
Okay. How about, let me ask
you. Farm subsidies are in that category also.
Farm subs. Let me ask you something about your dad.
Yes.
Your dad gave a lot of money to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. He gave $1 billion with a B. And when he signed that spending bill, he did it with a smile on his face. He was thrilled to give $1 billion, which was the hugest increase in funding for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting
yes.
that had ever happened, that they ever dreamed
yes.
of getting that
yes.
much money.
I like that word hugest. That's one I'm going to put in my playbook. That is definitely a PBS thing is a good thing, because it helps us to reach more people, and by showing and demonstrating that there's no child left behind. I'm sorry, that's another subject. That we are willing to reach out.
Yeah, but doesn't your dad realize that the public broadcasting hates Republicans? They hate conservatives. They hate everything Christian. They promote abortion and evolution and every sick sexual immorality.
Yes, that's true. But if we spend more money on PBS, we eventually think that the more money will eventually take over and we'll win the liberals over to our way of thinking.
Oh.
If we take more money from the taxpayers
yeah.
and give it to the government or non-government organizations that run PBS and decide
yeah.
what to tell America
well,
to think,
I've always,
we will have won the liberals over to our way of thinking.
W, I've always money. Wanted to ask you this question.
Yes.
Do you believe that man was specially created by God, or do you believe we've evolved from fish?
I never did believe in the fish theory.
You didn't?
Never did.
Well, Kurt, I think you just broke ranks.
What's a primate?
What's that?
What's a primate?
What's a primate?
Yeah, is that Laura? She be my primate.
Hey, thank you very much, W. From
You're more than welcome. Come visit me sometime.
From Knoxville, Tennessee. Best call. Now, was that the best call we ever had from Knoxville, Tennessee? I remember a call from Terry Johnson from Knoxville, Tennessee, 10 years ago. What a call that was. I'll tell you about it in June. What a call. Terry's in heaven right now. He's in heaven right now. And partly because we used to have H-free zones on the TV show. But we only let them last a week. But that was 10 years ago when we weren't quite as fed up as we are right now. Hey, it was fun talking to you guys out there in Radioland and on the web at kgov.com, kgov.com. It was really fun. Yeah, Gene Amel said, in death, I don't know where I'm going, and I don't even know if I shall exist. Wow, he found out, didn't he? He found out in a heartbeat, or should I say after the last heartbeat. This is Bob Inyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.